Hello, everyone, and welcome to another expert interview at the Innovation and Creativity Summit 2017. Very happy to have Mike Brown, the founder of BrainZooming, with us today. Mike, it's wonderful to have you.
Thank you, Nick. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you today and the whole audience.
No problem. So, for people who don't know about you or BrainZooming, can you give us a bit of your background and how you eventually ended up in innovation?
So I started off early on a small research company, worked for about 18 years at a company called Yellow Transportation, basically did international transportation based in the US, a lot of US work as well, doing strategic planning, market research, and inside that company had a great opportunity. We had tripled in size at one point. We'd gone from about 3 billion to 10 billion and got charged with working with all these competitive companies that we'd bought to help them be better marketers, be more strategic. But I was told you can't tell them what to do because we all compete. So I looked back into the things that we'd done over time and thought, well, if I can go in and ask them questions about the business, about their customers, about their marketplaces, they know about that. And if they're down really good paths, cheer them on and build off of those ideas. And if they're down bad paths, say, well, gosh, could we use a different perspective or a creativity technique or a different way of thinking about things and look at it this way? So I wasn't really telling them they were wrong. I was just giving them more opportunity to look at things different ways. So from that and getting to do that a couple hundred times inside the company and just seeing what worked and what didn't work, that really created what became BrainZooming. So we rolled that out from what had been an internal department into a business in 2009. And the BrainZooming blog had predated that by a couple of years, where I actually started to write about what we were doing. And that was the start, and have been very, very excited to be able to go beyond transportation and start to use the same kind of techniques in other industries and for different sized companies as well.
What exactly is brain zooming?
It sort of depends based on where people meet us. For some people, they think it's a blog, and that's all we do, write typically 4 to 5 times a week. Not so much about us, but more about here's the process and techniques and what we do. So I tell folks, if you want to put it together and go do it, almost everything we do is out there. We've got like 2,200, 2,300 blog posts by now that cover that. For other people, we look like maybe a more traditional consultant, but at the heart of that is all about collaboration and reaching out to customers or to employees or other audiences and getting them to help shape what strategy is. To other people, we look like social media folks because they've seen us on Twitter or they've seen us through Facebook or the blogs, and they think that's what we do. So I always tell people, maybe because what we do got developed on the client side of business, it doesn't look like a traditional agency or maybe even a traditional consultancy. I always said, when we did this stuff, I was around 365 days a year. So if people didn't like it or it didn't work, I had them in my office complaining about it. So we've really tried to focus on ideas through plans all the way through implementation. And hopefully provide some value and some ways to reach out to audiences that maybe businesses haven't had the opportunity to do before.
So let's talk about innovation today. And we had a quick chat before we started. What we're going to talk about today is all about perspectives and how they affect innovation. So can you give us a bit of an insight as to how you think different perspectives are important in how innovation is perceived in a company?
I think a lot of the traditional models of business were as you rise up in a company and you've got a senior management group, these are the people who are most qualified, have the best handle on everything to set strategy. And a lot of businesses have been really successful in the past with that, and a lot of businesses are still successful with that approach. A lot of managers, a lot of leaders, though, and maybe leaders more than managers see, though, that 4 or 5 people sitting around a boardroom may not have the best perspective across the whole organization, or there's things that they don't know, or even that there may be insights that exist in their customers or with their employees that would benefit the strategy that they're setting. So what we try and do and what we encourage people to do is start to reach out to those other audiences that have a sense of the brand or have a sense of what's working, and engage them in strategy in a way that makes sense for them. And to highlight that, you know, the easy route would be to say, well, this, you know, these people in the boardroom are considering what should our vision be for the future of the organization. The easy route is go out and ask somebody on the production line, well, what should our vision be for the company? And you get blank stares because I'm on a production line. I don't think about the vision for the company. And what we encourage organizations to do is go out and ask those folks questions that they can answer and provide a way for them to provide those insights. So you can go to somebody on a production line and say, well, what do you see that we're screwing up? What isn't working that we're trying to do? And they can answer that question. Or, you know, what are we doing that seems to be working, but we should be doing more of it? They can answer that question. So, you know, I've had that conversation with a lot of managers where they said, well, you know, we need to set the strategy inside the boardroom. It's like, I get that. I don't want the person on the production line to set the strategy for the company. That's not their job. That doesn't make sense. But in setting the strategy, you're going to be a lot smarter and wiser and probably have better results if you're bringing their perspectives in, because they see things that you don't see. So we really encourage them to think about, you know, look at your audiences, understand what their perspectives are, what they can answer, where they can contribute, and involve them in really meaningful ways to do that.
Isn't there a danger, though, of when you're just speaking to people about what's working, what we could do better, that you end up with just a list of incremental small innovations? And the people at the top of the company, they should be looking a bit further ahead.
Well, it's interesting, because we often start with people with a grid that looks at what's the degree of real issues in the company, performance issues or financial issues or whatever it is. And then on the y-axis, what's the perception of those issues? How widely are those recognized? And based on where they're starting and where they want to go to, yeah, it may be in the upper right, we need a total transformation. There's fundamental issues going on, and there's a really wide perception. So we've got to transform. I think in a lot of cases, at least with clients that we run into, they've been very successful down a path that they can't even see a different way of doing things. So we try and meet them where they see some success, but also challenge them to look further. I think you're right. The way that we approach it in going from incremental to bigger thinking or further out thinking, we try and do it with the exercises and the questions and then the audiences that we're speaking to. You know, I think the worst thing that a management group can do if they, you know, we need dramatic change, is to go around and start asking for what's the next big idea. Because it's similar to the vision question. You know, you can almost see the wheels go off in somebody's head when they're asked, what should our next big idea be? They're like, well, I have some ideas, but I'm not sure they're big ideas. And if I say it and it's not a big idea, then people are going to laugh at me, and then I'm going to not look good in this meeting, and no, I don't have any ideas. I'm not sure what we should do, and it shuts down. Whereas we find if we ask bigger questions that either challenge convention or challenge what an organization has done, people will start to fill those up. We published a question, an updated list the other day of extreme creativity questions, we call them, that we've seen it time and time again. When you start to ask these questions, people get the bigger ideas. And one of those was, what could we start breaking right now that would force us to do things differently? Well, people probably have a sense of, you know, here's some of the roadblocks that we've had, and here's what we could start to get away from and answer that. So that can get you to some of those bigger ideas. I think the other way is, and we'll advocate this a lot of times in how you bring customers or clients or people maybe who aren't clients into it, is go do lead user interviews. And I'll tell companies, and we did this at the transportation company I was in, go find the companies that are pushing you the hardest. They're asking for demanding things. They seem to be ahead of everybody else in the expectations that they have. Their expectations are going up faster. And go talk to them, not about the future, but what about today? What are they doing today? Because that's easier for them to talk about. if you pick the right companies that are ahead of the rest of the industry, you'll get a pretty good sense of where the industry's going. We used to do these in transportation, and we'd find these lead users, and we could go talk to maybe 25 or 30 of them and say, what's happening today or in the next year? Come back, distill those answers, and there was the next 36 months. And we watched it happen multiple times. We didn't have to ask about the future. We could start to find that pattern. So I think to your question about how do you get to the bigger disruptive ideas, I think part of it's the questions. Part of it's who you ask those questions of. And you can almost sort of dial in how disruptive or how far out you want to be based on those two variables.
But who then actually gets involved in making the innovations happen? Because it's one thing to figure out what the right questions to be asked are and the ideas to address those. What about actually delivering innovation?
Yeah, great question. I think there are a lot of different processes that work. We were talking to somebody recently in a public accounting firm, and they had a sense of we need to be more innovative. And I actually saw, the person had articles that they had highlighted that they'd written, and they had come to the conclusion that let's get an innovation team together, and we'll get a small one because we don't want a lot of folks, because we want it to be actionable, but maybe 5 or 6 or 8 people, and we'll get them together and have them come up with new ideas. And I challenged them on that. They said, that's just another different version of 6 senior partners sitting in a meeting trying to come up with what you should do next. I said, you wind up putting the onus on them and pointing the whole organization at them of, they're going to solve our innovation questions. They're going to go tackle it and make it work. And I said, that's not very realistic. They may come up with ideas, but it's going to take the whole organization. So we're in the midst of this, but trying to step them back through the process of lay out a direction that you want. Where do you want to take the organization? Is that a revenue growth? Is that types of services that you're offering? Use your management group to articulate that to the organization, and then start to ask them these questions that they can participate in of, well, how do you think we're going to get there? From your perspective, I don't need you to solve the whole thing, but what are some of the steps that you see? And then use that innovation team to actually own it and help move it forward. Because you do. Innovation isn't necessarily naturally occurring in most organizations where it's just going to bubble up. Somebody's got to own it, and somebody's going to drive that process. But I think that's where the team can be more effective than simply shutting them up as a think tank and knock on the door and, have you guys come up with the ideas yet? Well, no. We're very much in a lot of organizations, it's going to be process-based, and it's going to benefit from being as inclusive as possible. Steve Jobs at Apple, did he need that? No, because he was basically that visionary and sort of all those pieces rolled into one. And you've got those leaders out there. So, the type of things we advocate aren't necessarily for them because they have no need for it. But for most organizations, they don't have that particular leader or leadership group that has that clarity of vision and also clarity of what the marketplace is looking for. So I think some of these ideas help for, the 98% of organizations that are in that kind of situation.
Yeah, I think something that a lot of companies really struggle with is figuring out what the strategy really should be. A lot of them will either think we need to base it all on perfect evidence and right. and therefore we need the data to back up any decision we make. And then other ones are the ones that are a bit more willing to think, well, something might happen, it might not happen, but we need to be ready for it either one way or another.
Yeah, and that's why I think, I don't know if that means we're generalists or centrists or whatever, but I'm sort of leery of both, of just sort of randomly let's let everybody just go off and do whatever. And I'm also leery of over controlling it in having to ever have every answer. You're not going to have that. I mean, I think the best approach is set up situations where you're willing to take on risk, where we can try this and it may not work and it's not going to kill us, but we're going to learn from it, and that'll make us better, and we'll go on to the next thing. I think going back to that grid I was talking about, for organizations that don't have a lot of issues, but they have a perceived need to change, a lot of times we recommend, you know, set up an experimentation path. You're going to make a conscious set of experiments over the next year, 18 months, and you know that some of these are going to hit and some of them aren't, but that's okay. You know, the whole just random, I guess I'm too much of a corporate strategy guy from growing up to say, you know, let's just see what happens and let people run wild. I'm a believer in, like you said, set that vision, set the direction, and then let people figure out maybe some of the best ways to tackle that or make that happen, bring it to life.
I think that's one of the things that we can help with today, actually giving people some insights into how you work out what the strategy should be using some question techniques. And I think you call them disruptive, strategic disruptor techniques. Is that right?
Strategic detours.
If
you think about that, if you drive the same way to work every day, you sort of can check off and not really think about it too much. But if a detour, you know, the road's closed or there's some damage that's being repaired in the road, all of a sudden you have to think about, well, which way am I going? And is this going to take me longer to get to work? And what's going to happen? Similar kind of thing, I think, with a lot of strategy exercises, the SWOT analysis, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And a lot of companies, that's asked every year. And people know what the answers are. And the answers don't change so much throughout the year. But if you start to ask them differently, ask questions or give people exercises that they have to think about it, all of a sudden you now get to some different answers. So, you know, as an example, one of the ones that we use in place of strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats is we ask people to look out, instead of looking to the future, we ask them to go out 3 years on a new initiative or a new project, or 18 months, whatever the relevant time frame is, and say, now look backwards. And in one scenario, assume that what we did was incredibly successful, successful beyond our wildest imagination. What were the factors that led to that? And now people are sort of looking back, oh, well, we had to do this, or the economy had to stay good, or these other things. Fantastic, let's capture those. Then flip it around and say, let's go out the same amount of time, 18 months or 3 years, and look back. And this initiative was a complete failure. It bombed. It didn't work at all. What were the factors there? And they can say, oh, well, if that happened, you know, we could never do that. Or, you know, if this went this way, this wouldn't work. And you start to get those things. And you get different answers there than if you had said, well, what are the opportunities and threats and what are our strengths and weaknesses to make it happen? I used that back in the transportation company. It was really the first time we used it. And we had a big push at that point of technology. Technology was going to be our savior. This was before the early dot-com bust. And all we did was talk about technology, and rightly so. When we did this exercise, though, with leadership, and it came back, our make-or-break issue, so it surfaced on both the opportunity side, the good side, and the bad side, was our relationship with our labor union. It was like, you know what? We have about 10 people on labor, and we have 400 on technology, but we've said that labor is the make-or-break issue. And we actually predated a couple of years of actually buying some of these other competitors to give us a little bit more leverage with the labor union and actually start to get some concessions and some things that allowed us to function better. So if we'd have gone in and said, what's the most important thing for the company? Technology. Yeah, it's important, but asking the question a different way got us to the real underlying issue in a different way of thinking about the strategy.
I really like that concept of figuring out what's really at the heart of what's going to make a change. And also the sort of questions that help shake up your way of thinking. Because one of the things I've loved about this summit is we've had a lot of discussions with people studying creativity and how the brain operates. And more research is showing us that the brain's just very good at getting into patterns of what it know works and then just keeping the sort of the easy autopilot state there.
And at times that makes a lot of sense. I talk about in a lot of workshops that creativity and innovation in a business is like a present maybe that you get for your birthday or for a holiday. It comes to you and it's wrapped really nice and there's bows and ribbons and it's beautiful. But I said the only way to get to the really cool stuff inside is to tear that paper off. And conventional wisdom, this understanding of, well, things have always worked this way, is a lot like that. You can, well, gosh, it's so pretty and it helps us. I don't want to take any risk of ripping it off. But it takes doing that to actually get to the ideas inside. And in some businesses are a lot more comfortable at doing that. I think you can use creativity techniques to sort of rip that paper off for a while so that you can look at it in a different way, but still with that backdrop of here's what's smart in our business, because chances are it's probably still going to be smart, you know, 2 months from now and maybe a year from now, but with that sensibility that, you know, it may not be smart anymore at some point, and let's have thought about other ways of doing things or be trying some things ahead of the time it isn't smart anymore.
Now, before we started the recording, you and I had a quick chat, and we were discussing some of the techniques you use when you're
Right.
working with these companies. One technique and set of questions I really liked, which I'd like to talk about now, is this concept of figuring out what's safe and reliable in a company and asking what would happen if something were to go wrong with that. Can you tell us about that sort of example?
Yeah, so we have a set of what we call extreme creativity questions, and those actually came from when I made the move from corporate to being out on my own. I'd always tended to work with really great creative geniuses, and I was sort of the guy who, like, okay, I get what you're doing, let me go implement it. And then when we started brainstorming, I realized I needed to be the guy with those ideas, but I was like, that's not necessarily how I've grown up in my career. So I realized instead of looking for the big ideas, the key was develop questions that give people a lot of room to explore and push beyond conventional boundaries. So the one you're mentioning was, and we just had published this idea of what could we start breaking right now in the business that would force us to basically turn our backs on where we've been and start exploring new territory. So that's a question that you're basically giving people permission to say, you know what, you don't have to think about today and keeping today. Within the scope of this question, jettison all that stuff, and what would you start to do? Now, at the end of that, you may have things that are so wild and so crazy, you can't go do them all, but then that's where you've at least pushed people into thinking about things that they wouldn't have gotten to, and you can start to ratchet those back and say, well, you know, what new places does this take us that we could start? Or if we did 25% of that, what would it look like? But these extreme creativity questions, it's fun because we'll actually do it in a workshop where we ask people very conventional questions and we'll get incremental ideas. And then we'll start to ask them the big questions. And all of a sudden, you can tell the excitement in the room. There's a lot more laughter. It gets noisier because we've given them the freedom inside that question to start to explore a lot more.
Yeah, I like this concept of exploring and sort of challenging the way things currently run in the company. And you and I, you told me a story of what you talked about with companies recently, a movie analogy, which really sort of sums that up quite beautifully.
Yeah, so you know, we've been talking about, you know, some of the stuff we do is pretty conventional, you know, basic fundamental things, but at times clients will come to us and maybe they have a business book that they like or they want to do something else and we don't have an exercise for it, so we'll go create something. So in this case, we were working with a state forester in the US and he had read the book about black swans, which the idea that, you know, the internet or 9/11, these events that happen good or bad, but they fundamentally change the dynamics and you can't anticipate them. And he said, you know, as a state forester, we're subject to a lot of things that could go wrong or could change. And he pointed to an adjoining state where they had done a controlled burn over a course of a weekend. It had gotten out of control. Some homes were burned down. I think some people were killed. And within a couple of weeks, the state legislature had defunded the Forestry Bureau. He's like, if something like that happens, what do we do? So we looked into the book and played around with it and said, well, okay, by definition, you can't anticipate them. That's probably not the way to go. But a lot of times what kills organizations or kills initiatives are the basic things that somebody forgot about or seemed like they were working and they didn't. So as I was pondering that, I thought about a scene from the original movie Ghostbusters where the Ghostbusters are on top of the skyscraper and they've been told that whatever the first thing that pops into their head is going to be the thing that destroys them. And Ray, I think it was, thought of the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man, because he's, you know, so safe, and he, you know, I loved him when I was a little kid. He could never do anything to harm us, and all of a sudden there was a 200-pound Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man who was going to kill them. I thought, you know what, that's basically what we're doing here is let's give them exercises to say, well, what's working right now that, you know, you don't even think about anymore? What's out of sight, out of mind? Or what are the things that seem to be going well, but if they didn't, would start to cause problems? Those types of questions they could answer and really go to town on of, you know, here are the things that we just don't really focus on, but have the potential to either be really good or really bad for us. And then we had them build mini plans around what would happen if those things happened. So between Ghostbusters was the front end of that, and the back end of it actually came from Rudy Giuliani, interestingly enough, who was mayor of New York at 9/11. I saw him speak at one of our conferences, and he said, we didn't have a plan for what happens if two planes hit the World Trade Center, but we had a lot of smaller response plans, and our challenge that day was how do we piece these small plans together to address this cataclysmic event. It's like, yeah, I'm going to put those two things together. Interestingly, both came out of New York, Ghostbusters and the Giuliani example, and gave them a way as an organization to anticipate what some of those big things could be and then be ready for them. So, yeah, some of our things are traditional. Some of them come from movies, TV shows, reality shows. We'll pull from anywhere to help people think about stuff.
Mike, it's been wonderful speaking with you. One thing I like to ask before we finish the interviews with all the experts is if you've got one tip or one actionable insight that people can get some value out of by trying out this afternoon or this week, what would you recommend they try?
I think the easiest one is the next strategy meeting or creativity meeting or innovation meeting you're going to, drop your list of who you would traditionally invite, you would typically have there. And then go invite two other people that you would never think inviting to that meeting. You know, it may be an emerging leader in the organization. It may be the person who challenges every idea. Those are the people who are going to come to the meeting and just be natural instigators, natural disruptors of your thought patterns. And they'll get benefit out of it. They'll get access, and you'll get a chance to see them. So that's really easy. Just find those two people who you wouldn't typically invite to that meeting and invite them, get them involved.
Perfect. And we're going to get links down to your resources below the video here. Can you just let people know what they'll find if they go there?
Yeah, at brainzooming.com, we've got over 2,000 blog posts about what we do, and not, hey, come buy it from us, but here's how you can go use these approaches. Here's how you can build on them. We've got ebooks on innovation and strategy. So again, you can take this and start to, you know, make it very actionable in your own organization. That's all at brainzooming.com.
Perfect. Mike, it's been wonderful having you here, and I look forward to speaking again with you soon.
Thank you very much, Nick. Take care and good success with the summit. Thank you.
Congratulations on being part of the Innovation and Creativity Summit. I'm sure that if you continue to watch the other expert interviews, you will experience an improvement in your capability to turn your ideas into something valuable. But don't forget, to get the very best experience and ensure you don't miss any of the priceless lessons, you should invest in yourself with the All Access Pass. Not only will this give you exclusive lifetime access to watch all the lessons whenever is best for you, you will also get all the interviews as downloadable audio files so you can learn on the go, full transcripts so you can read and analyze the great advice and tips, and exclusive bonuses not available to anyone else. Click the link below to get your All Access Pass now.